yourself a cold one.
They strike them, huh?
And listen to Russ Tucker and Philadelphia Eagles film junkie Fran Duffy break down the top college prospects on another tasty edition of The College Draft.
Yeah, it is Daddy Soda time here on the College Draft Podcast. We are year-round breaking down the best prospects, getting you ready for the biggest games in college football, making sure you know who the best prospects are, and of course, getting you ready for the draft each and every year. Although evidently there's more than one draft. There's only one draft in April, but the supplemental draft, Fran, it's like a thing this year.
It is a thing, and we haven't seen a player selected in the supplemental draft since 2015, but I think this year we'll see a couple guys, and it's Wednesday, I think at 1 p.m., so maybe by the time you've listened to this, it may have already happened, but it's a very quick draft. I don't know if you're aware of how it goes, Ross, but it's way, way different than April's draft. It's an interesting process.
Right. Can you imagine if that's how they did April's draft? Everybody just kind of submitted a bid. For those of you that aren't familiar and you're new to the show, he's Fran Duffy. He's really the star of the show. He's the video scouting guru for the Philadelphia Eagles. Highly encourage you to check him out on Twitter at FDuffy3. He's got the sickness. He's got the disease. I talk about it. The fantasy dudes have it, like my guy Evan Silva on the Fantasy Feast. Fran absolutely has it when it comes to breaking down prospects. He loves this stuff. I'm Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman, 5 teams, 7 years. You can check me out Twitter and Instagram at Ross Tucker NFL. And all of our shows on Twitter are at RTF Podcast. If you're a Facebook person, it's just facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL. Cannot tell you how much we appreciate those of you that retweet the show or give it a like on Facebook or whatever the case may be. We will be joined momentarily by Dane Brugler. Does such an awesome job with what he does for CBS Sports, NFL Draft Scout. His preview, Fran, every year is a must-have.
Dane is one of the best, and I would say that from a media standpoint, there aren't many people that are as close to being like getting the experience of being an NFL scout. Like if you're a listener, if you're a fan, if you're a reader of Dane's content, like you are reading as close to what an NFL scouting report is like when you read Dane. Dane is awesome.
And we should point out before we actually talk to Dane, Fran, that for those of you that are not familiar, the supplemental draft is for guys who are no longer eligible to play college or they have some issue after April's draft. It's usually academic. It can be conduct. We'll talk to Dane about that a little bit. And also the draft process, Fran, it's basically like a silent auction. You know, you submit and you say, all right, I'll take Fran Duffy in the third round. And Brian says he'll take Fran Duffy in the fourth round. Well, I would get him. So there's a pecking order for each team, almost like a waiver claim process, Fran.
It's very similar to a waiver claim process. Basically, what happens is all 32 teams are split up into three groups. There's the teams that won 6 games or less. There's the non-playoff teams that won 6 games or more. And then there are the playoff teams. So that makes it easy for the league to say, okay, here are the three groups of teams. If a player gets bid on by a team in, you know, whatever of the 7 rounds, he gets filtered into those groups. And if there are 2 bids from the same group, then it just reverts to April's draft order. So that's kind of how it all happens. It's like I said, it's very rare that we see players selected. But as we're going to find out shortly when we talk about these prospects with Dane, I think we'll see definitely one. I would expect at least 2 of these guys to get bid on. So it should be an interesting process this week.
All right, well, let's get to it.
Best available interview.
Dane, always appreciate the time, and Fran and I were just saying it's been a while since the supplemental draft was something we actually had to talk about and bring somebody like you on to break down the guys.
Yeah, it's well, we've seen one draft in the last 5 years. Go back to Josh Gordon, the last time we had a player really worthy of early round speculation, Terrell Pryor the year after that in the third round, so supplemental draft making a little bit of a comeback this year.
So I guess the first question I have, Dane, I guess it's a two-parter, okay? So the first part is just the nature of the supplemental draft, and I don't mean the reasons why the guys are in the supplemental draft, but just the nature of the supplemental draft. Do you think it's fair, and since the draft pick is for the subsequent year, you know, for the next year you lose it, do you think it's fair to say guys typically go around later than perhaps they would if it was the real draft?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And, you know, the supplemental draft has changed so much over the years, you know, going back to the mid-80s when Bernie Kosar kind of, reworked it so he could enter the supplemental draft, go to his hometown Browns. So the rules have changed over the years, and just how execs and scouts and GMs view the supplemental draft. And it's different team by team. Some teams are a little more hard pressed to win this year, and so they're okay giving up that future draft pick. They're not really worried about next April. They're worried about this fall and, you know, fielding a team that's going to compete. And so from team to team, the philosophy is going to change a little bit. Teams that are really aggressive, I think they're going to be aggressive in this year's supplemental draft. And this year we have two, three players who could hear their name called.
So then the next question, Dane, is how much are these guys knocked typically just by the fact that they're in the supplemental draft at all, right? Like, how much is it like, all right, well, we're going to knock this guy around because if he's in the supplemental draft, there's a reason and it's not good.
Well, and it's just like the regular draft. It's a case-by-case basis. Sam Beal's in a supplemental draft for a different reason than, Brandon Bryant or Adonis Alexander or some of these other guys. And each one has their own set of different circumstances. That's what teams are doing. The last month and a half is diving in, finding everything they can about these guys. The interview process, you know, we don't have the combine. We don't have the Senior Bowl. But the process for a lot of these teams, it's very similar because they're going to do just as much work on these players to make sure they know everything about them. The exact set of circumstances why they had to enter the draft. For a lot of these guys, it's academics. They were either ineligible to return or their eligibility was in question. And so instead of going that route and trying to maybe redshirt next year, they decided to enter the supplemental draft. Some of these guys have more questions. Adonis Alexander from Virginia Tech, he's been in and out of the doghouse at Virginia Tech the last 3 years. Brandon Bryant's had his share of off-field issues. Carter, the running back from Grand Valley State, his accountability issues go back to high school. So each one has their own set of circumstances that we could judge the tape, but using a draft pick on them, just like the regular draft, it's a lot more involved.
All right, well, then let's dive into it. It seems like the guy I've read the most about is Western Michigan cornerback Sam Beal. So I'll start with him. Is it fair to say he's the best prospect in the draft?
I think so. He's the main attraction. Last year, 12 passes defended, 2 interceptions. He came close to entering April's draft, but he wanted to go back to school, get his degree. And then he ran into some credit issues this spring. That's what really put his 2018 season in jeopardy. So he decided to just jump into the supplemental pool. And you look at him, impressive size, speed athlete, 6'1", 4'4", speed. In my report, after I watched tape, I estimated 4.45, 4.48, somewhere in there. And at his pro day, he ran a 4.47. So I think the testing matches the tape. He's a traditional press man corner. He relies on side saddle technique instead of a true back pedal. Loves to play bump and run. You can see him, you watch his sophomore tape and you watch his junior tape, and you really start to see him start to see things quicker out there, both as a route, judging routes, and then working at the line of scrimmage. So the length, the speed, the physicality, mid-route, all fantastic. But I think what you really see and you can key in on is that he relies on those physical tools over mechanics. And experienced NFL route runners, they're going to be able to take advantage of that, take advantage of his selective technique. And so I think the anticipation is not where it needs to be right now. I think that shows downfield. He's often late to turn, find the football. And the other main issue I have is just the lack of play strength. That shows in the run game. You see the intentions are there, but the technique is off. He just has trouble getting his guy on the ground at times, and that lack of finishing strength really can impact the game. So the unsophisticated technique, the discipline issues, those are reasons why I don't think he's quite ready for a steady diet of NFL snaps. So I'm not sure he's going to make this big impact as a rookie, but the tools are really impressive. And I think he's coachable. I think he's going to grow into a starter in the NFL, a cover and clobber type of outside corner. And so I think going into year two is when you're really going to see him compete for starting snaps. And it's going to be interesting to see where he lands on in the supplemental draft. I think we're going to see a lot of third round bids on him. I think the question will be, is there a team that wants him bad enough that they don't want to risk losing him in the third round, so they put in a second on him? Either way, I'd be surprised if he lasts into the fourth round.
Dane, I think you and I see Beal very, very similarly. A lot of the things you said, I 1,000% agree with. You know, this kid, his ease of movement, I think, is apparent right away. I agree. His eye discipline is the one thing you worry about. The play strength is definitely in there as well. And a lot of the same things I think you could probably say about Adonis Alexander, the corner from Virginia Tech. He was the guy, he was the first one to officially declare for the supplemental draft. And that's where all the early buzz went, was to Alexander. He was the big name. I do feel that Beal's upside is much bigger, and I would agree. I think he's going to go earlier in this draft than Alexander. But I think when you look at Alexander, you could say a lot of the same things, you know, eye discipline, just kind of really loose and cavalier with his technique. I would say that Beal's ball skills are probably a little bit better than Alexander's as well. What are your thoughts on Adonis Alexander and his prospects, I guess, moving into this week?
Alexander will be interesting. He's got a little more off-field questions that teams are going to have to, you know, really dive into and understand what you're getting. And with Alexander, I think it's interesting, too, that he started as a rover in Bud Foster's defense. So he has that experience at safety where, you know, teams might look at him at that position as well. He moved a corner 2 years ago. And even in high school, he was playing a hybrid linebacker safety position. So it's an interesting player. The first thing that stands out with him is the size. You know, 6'2", 195 pounds. And kind of like what you were saying, he moves fairly composed for a player of that stature. You see the movement skills, you see the toughness. He has the length, so he can match up with the bigger targets on the outside. My main issue with Alexander, and kind of along the lines of what you were saying, is just the lack of short area quickness. It causes his transition to slow, creates issues with his technique. You watch the West Virginia tape from last year, and David Sills, who isn't exactly a route technician, he was able to consistently create space at route breaks, and Alexander wasn't able to hang with him. And so he's going to face much better receivers at the NFL level. So I think teams who place a premium on size and length on outside corners, they're really going to be intrigued. And I think there will be other teams that view him as a safety because he has the range, he has the toughness to hold up against the run. He has some experience there. And so I think a move to safety could also mask the lack of suddenness that we were missing from his transition. So based just on tape, I think Alexander is going to receive second, third round grades. But then you also factor in the off field. He was in and out of the coach's doghouse, like I mentioned, marijuana stuff, being late to practice, just a lot of immature decisions. And so questions about his ability to be a professional, that's going to pop up a lot. And so I don't think he's going to be drafted necessarily where his tape and potential say he should be, second, third round. But I still think he's going to be somewhere in those middle rounds, you know, maybe fourth round. That would be my projection for him.
What about Mississippi State safety Brandon Bryant?
You know, to be honest, I was a tad disappointed when I really dove in, because you watched Mississippi State, that defense last few years, and Bryant would pop off the film a little bit. You see the flashes dating back to his freshman year. And then when I really sat down, studied his junior tape, I was just really underwhelmed. I think I could count on one hand the number of plays that I saw him make outside the hashes. Now, he's a very impressive athlete. He has that profile that fits the NFL, especially for a safety. Above average speed, smooth hips, change of direction skills. but the athleticism is often negated by below average anticipation. It doesn't really matter how fast you are if the mental processing doesn't match. And so you also factor in the maturity questions with him, and I'd guess it's probably 50-50 Bryant gets drafted in the supplemental draft. He has the NFL level athleticism, and that speed, the toughness, that could play well on special teams if he gets a chance. But the lack of football instincts, I think that really limits his ability to sniff out plays. And it's those mental hurdles that I think will really keep him from making a real push for defensive snaps once he gets into the league.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think the point you made about the difference between the time speed, because remember, there have been reports going back to early in his career that he was in the 4.2s. I think he ran like 4.45 was it at his pro day. But there were reports that he was breaking 4.3 there at Mississippi State every spring since he's been on campus. But the time speed doesn't necessarily always match up with what you see on film with his play speed. That's going to be really interesting. I think he's got a really high floor because of that athleticism, because of what you've got there in terms of his movement skills. But I agree with everything you said about Brandon Bryant. Let's get into two guys that I don't think a lot of people have really kind of dove into. Let's start with Oregon State linebacker Bright Ugwebu. Undersized kid. I think he's 6 foot, 205, 210. What's the book on this kid?
Well, he was born in London, grew up in Nigeria. His dad was a Nigerian diplomat, and tragically, he was murdered. He was in his car in a kind of an assassination type of deal. And he moved to the States, the Houston area, with his mom and his siblings when he was 7 years old. Played high school football in Houston before he went to Oregon State. And for the Beavers, he was a little bit of a do-everything type of linebacker. He played outside, but he's more of a nickel defender. On one snap, he's rushing off the edge. The next, he's dropping, covering the slot receiver. He's a very alert player, and I really like his knack for weaving through traffic, finding the ball carrier. He does a nice job making himself skinny through the gap, so you'll see him make plays in the backfield. But the question is, you said some of the measurables at 6'1", 205 pounds, he has the size of a safety. And so as an NFL prospect, where do you play him? He's not a reject as a prospect, but you have to really consider, okay, where is he going to fit on our football team? The ball pursuit, the hustle, those are there. That you can see that clearly on film. And that's going to give him a chance once he gets in training camp. But I think it's going to be tough for him to find a spot on an active roster just because of the lack of a true identity on defense. And the poor workout times won't help. A 4.9 in the 40-yard dash, a 7.43 cone. And I should clarify, or not clarify, but point out that, with these pro days, at least with the regular draft process, the guys are just coming off, a full season where they're in, peak physical condition. And they go straight from the season into training for the combine, for the pro day, and they have ample amount of time to prepare. These guys are kind of thrown into the mix where, they have weeks, maybe a month to prepare for their pro day. And so I think that's why we're seeing a lot of the below average times, but still a 4.9 in the 40-yard dash at 6'1", 205, that's really tough to get kind of look past. Even though he plays a little faster on film, I'd be very surprised if we see Ugwebu get drafted.
And then lastly, I guess the Grand Valley State running back, Martavius Carter, you mentioned him a little bit earlier.
Yeah, crazy productive at the Division II level. He had almost 2,000 rushing yards as a sophomore 2 years ago. And then last year, there were some injury issues. It didn't play didn't have the same number of snaps. Still averaged 7.6 yards per carry when he was on the field. You see him follow blockers at daylight. He has quick feet. He can cut away from trouble. Not the biggest guy. He's only about 200 pounds. I have some concerns about his vision at the line of scrimmage, but not in the open field. He does a great job creating those chunk plays once he gets past the first wave. It's probably what he does best. But overall, I think you look at the lack of run power, the lack of anticipation as an inside runner. Those are big concerns. And I think he has the athleticism that's enough to escape trouble at the D2 level against D2 speed. I don't think it's that he has the same athleticism that's going to be able to do that against NFL speed. So you also factor in the accountability issues. He was he was all set to go to Northern Illinois, be a part of the, a solid MAC program. And then that fell through. There were some life issues that he had to work through, ends up at D2 Grand Valley State. The coaches say he's a good kid. There's definitely some accountability issues there. So I expect him to go unclaimed. Hopefully he can land in a camp and see if he could survive Final Cuts.
We also wanted to ask you, Dane, we're getting into our conference previews today, heading into the season, which can't believe it's almost here already. And so we just wanted to ask you, today we're doing the non-Power 5 guys. I couldn't believe what this guy did as a true freshman at the position he did it at. And let's start with Ed Oliver, Houston defensive tackle. I don't know how far along you are looking at the 2019 draft class yet, but everywhere I look, it seems like he's ranked number one, at the top, if not number one overall.
Yeah, it's really an easy evaluation. It doesn't take long after studying him to realize he's one of the most disruptive players in the country. He does it with quickness. He flashes power. And I really think the most impressive aspect of his game is just a relentless nature that he plays with. He plays at a non-Power 5 program against not the best competition, but the energy level, it's there every snap. And so the dominance that he's shown up to this point, it reminds me a lot of what we saw Ndamukong Suh do his senior year at Nebraska, because not only is he physically gifted, but he doesn't take a snap off. That was Suh back then, and that's Oliver now. The energy is nonstop. We're going to hear a lot of Aaron Donald comparisons the next 10 months or so, which is obviously lofty praise, but you can see those flashes. And I think we're going to see the comparisons, especially because Oliver, he's a tick undersized. He's probably 6'1.5", 290-ish pounds. He will have his struggles once blockers get into his frame and they're able to control his chest. But the quickness, the play anticipation, they're both off the charts. And it doesn't matter where you play him. Houston, they would often line him up at the nose, and he was just as effective with that speed and understanding of his movement. So Oliver's got the backfield vision, the instincts. He can recognize play design. Like I said, the motor doesn't quit. And so he's able to disrupt plays from every angle. For me, Ohio State Nick Bosa is my number one player this year, but Oliver's right there. He's at number two. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch him this fall.
Dane, you and I have been friends now for a few years, and I think I've gotten to the point now, and we've watched enough football together down at the Senior Bowl, where I can watch a player and say, you know what, I think Dane is going to like this kid. And one of those players was Buffalo wide receiver Anthony Johnson. You and I have not spoken about him yet, but it was my gut feeling right? Do you like Anthony Johnson, the kid from Buffalo?
Yeah, there's plenty to like. I do have questions about, just the overall speed and the athleticism. Yep. I mean, he's a good athlete, and he's a good-sized athlete. He's physically built. He doesn't have necessarily that suddenness that you want to easily detach from coverage, but he's very comfortable with a man on his hip. He maintains his focus. He's got that large catch radius. You see that on back shoulders, on jump balls. Very easy body control, strong hands. He's never going to be the fastest player on the field. On tape, I guess he was probably a 4.53 type of athlete. And, you can win like that. There are plenty of receivers in the NFL that size. So he's smooth, not sudden. You love the production. Unfortunately, the toughest opponent on the Buffalo schedule this year, you're looking at Temple, Rutgers, Toledo. So he's not going to face many NFL-level cornerbacks, and that's where it's a little different when we were evaluating Corey Davis out of the MAC a couple of years ago. I think he faced three Big Ten teams that year. So with Johnson, it's going to make the Senior Bowl and the pre-draft process that much more important for him. Right now, I view him as a solid day two prospect. We'll see what he does as a senior. Can he develop his route running and just be as productive as he was last year? He's a JUCO kid, spent time at two different junior colleges, had some academic issues. That's why he didn't go to a bigger program, transferred to Buffalo, redshirted, and then announced his presence last year. 76 catches, almost 1,400 yards, 14 scores, and just, the cherry on top. He's related, the cousin of Jadeveon Clowney, comes from the same area in Rock Hill, South Carolina. So plenty to like with Anthony Johnson. He's he's one of the top, you know, three or four senior wide receivers this year going into the year. A solid day two guy. He has a chance to move up if he continues to show development in some areas.
Yeah, speed, route running are definitely questions there. When I go back to the combine, I talked with Darius Geis as he was walking off the podium after he spoke at his media availability. And I asked him real quick, I said, hey, Darius, who was the best player you faced one-on-one this year? And he told me it was Notre Dame linebacker Tavon Coney. And I hadn't watched Coney, but he had always flashed whenever I watched him. Went back and studied him this offseason, and I was really impressed. What have you seen when you watched this kid on film?
That's a good nugget right there with Geis. And played the LSU Notre Dame in the bowl game, and Coney had a good season last year. I think 117 tackles. Really showed the growth that the coaches wanted to see, because he got in some legal trouble off the field, on the field, wasn't quite living up to the potential because he was starting as a sophomore, and so he made a big jump as a junior. And you watch him, you're right. I mean, there's plenty to like. He looks the part. He moves well. He's quick in pursuit. He can diagnose the backfield action, beat blockers to the spot, attack downhill. For me, the biggest issues came when the blockers were able to reach him. And he can struggle quickly shedding the point of attack. It was a little too easy for blockers to eliminate him from the play once they kind of latched on to him. It's funny, a couple weeks ago, I was trading notes with an NFL scout, and he told me he put a third round grade on Coney based off of last year. I think he expected him to come out in the last year's draft. So he put a third round grade on him, and I think that's fair. Just based on the tape that I watched from last year, it's kind of up and down at times. If he can do a better job sifting through the trash, seeing through bodies, improving his consistency, if he shows those improvements as a senior, I think he has a legit shot to maybe vault into the top 50 and be one of the top seniors at his position.
You mentioned earlier the issues we have with Anthony Johnson not being able to see him against top competition. That's not an issue we're going to have with Jalen Ferguson, the pass rusher from Louisiana Tech. They consistently have some SEC teams on the schedule. I know they played Mississippi State last year. That was a game I watched of him. 6'5", 270 pounds. High ceiling for this kid. What have you seen from when you've watched Jalen Ferguson?
Productive. A guy who, since he entered the starting lineup, has done a nice job getting to the backfield and impacting what the offense is trying to do. In last year, hey, we saw Conference USA produce a big-time pass rusher with Marcus Davenport, went mid-first round. This year, Ferguson, he's the top pass rushing prospect in the conference. I don't think he's quite mid-first round, but still a solid player who I think going into this year is being viewed as a solid top 100 type of prospect. And so he's got a senior year where he can either cement that or even show that he's a little bit better than that. So you see the edge speed. He can dip around the corner. He can close on the quarterback, very active hands. You love the relentless motor that he brings. Biggest thing I want to see, he's still learning how to patch together those rush moves so he can be a little more efficient from start to finish, just to combat what the blockers are trying to throw at him. So you see him line up in a stand up off the edge, 2-point, he'll put his hand on the ground. They'll move him inside on passing downs. He'll beat interior blockers with quickness. So, like you said, there's plenty to like with Louisiana Tech, what they do, the players that they put into the league, especially on defense the last few years. Yep. They put some guys into the league. And yeah, you look at the schedule this year, they're at LSU. So that'll be mid-September. That'll be a big showdown, see what Ferguson can do against the Tigers' offensive line.
So the first guy on this list that I haven't yet seen is FAU running back Devin Singletary, one of the underclassmen at the running back position. It's gotten a lot of buzz. Tell me what to expect when I turn this kid on.
Well, I don't know if a player has had a more productive season and didn't get as much hype as he deserved. Last year, he had almost 2,000 yards, 32 touchdowns, and I don't think maybe only the diehard college football fans and draft fans really know about him. They think of FAU. I think they think of Lane Kiffin, not Devin Singletary, who had a fantastic sophomore season last year. He had 32 rushing touchdowns. That's almost 10 more than second person on the list, which was Rashad Penny with 23. Last year, his worst game, Devin Singletary, was against Wisconsin. But he was still able to average 4.0 yards per carry, and he did find the end zone against the Badgers. So with Singletary, I think what stands out the most is his ability to slip tackles. He can make defenders miss. Terrific balance, quick feet. He can slide, weave through the defense. He flashes a second-level burst where he can just motor away from pursuit, and that's appropriate because his nickname is Motor. And so you can see it right away where he gets it from. He's not an overpowering runner. He's going to be around 200, 205 pounds, but he doesn't gear down at contact. He'll lower his pads in the bodies. He'll finish strong. He has widescreen vision. He can sense the cutback lanes, shows a good feel for developing holes on the inside. He's only a junior. He's going to be a junior this year in 2018. But if he puts up another year like he did last year and stays healthy, I think it's a good bet he's going to bolt to the NFL, especially playing the position that he does. And he could be one of the first drafted at his position. It's a weird year for running backs this year. Last few years we've had the big name guys like Leonard Fournette and that group. But this year, we have some talent, but I don't think we have that no brainer. He's going to be a first round pick. I mean, I like Damian Harris out of Alabama. I like Bryce Love. The Big 12 has a trio of underclassmen running backs with Justice Hill and Rodney Anderson, Montgomery from Iowa State. But I don't think any of these guys are a no-brainer first-round pick. Singletary, he's right there in that mix, kind of fighting, jockeying for position, who could be the first among the first running backs drafted next spring.
Dane, this was awesome. It always is. Really, really appreciate the time. Totally ready for the supplemental draft tomorrow, and I like getting the insight on some of the top non-Power 5 guys. Thank you so much.
Enjoyed it. Thanks, guys.
Make sure you check him out on Twitter, at DP Brugler. If you can't tell, the guy is about as close as it gets to being an NFL scout out there. Really, really impressive. That was awesome. Love talking to Dane Brugler. Almost as much as I love getting fantastic jeans and t-shirts at like less than half the price that they charge you in stores. If you guys have not checked out Mott and Bow yet, you really, really need to. I've had a chance to talk to their founder, Alejandro Chahin, who grew up in a family that specialized in manufacturing jeans. That was his family. He moved to New York City from Honduras and immediately was on this mission to say, how can we make these ridiculously comfortable jeans with premium denim and deliver them at a price that everybody can afford? Well, the answer is manufacture them yourself and cut out the middleman. And that's what they've done. You order it all online. And these are like the jeans that people hopefully you're not like these people, but people that pay like $200 for jeans. It drives me crazy. Anyway, you don't need to do that. These jeans are less than half the cost. Plus, you get 15% off when you use the promo code DRAFT at checkout. It's mottandbow.com. 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 It's absolutely awesome. Make sure you use the promo code DRAFT at checkout to get 15% off your already awesomely priced jeans.
Daddy Sodas.
All right, Fran. So we'll talk about some of these guys, throughout the season as they're playing big games. But we want to just know who's on your watch list going into the season. Let's start at quarterback.
So the seniors to watch at quarterback, Brett Rippon from Boise State, Mark Rippon's nephew, Easton Stick from North Dakota State, who took over for Carson Wentz, Justice Hansen from Arkansas State, Tanner Mangum from BYU, feels like he's been there for 8 years, Riley Neal from Ball State, and then there's a couple underclassmen, really, Tyree Jackson from Buffalo, big kid who's athletic, who has gotten a lot of buzz, and then Mackenzie Melton from the undefeated Central Florida Knights. So those would be the guys at quarterback to watch.
Who are the guys in the non-Power 5 that we need to keep an eye on this year at running back?
So I've studied Marquise Young, a little bit undersized, not overly powerful or explosive, but a change of pace guy. So that's one guy. But after that, Ryquell Armstead from Temple, Wesley Fields from Georgia Southern, I know is on the radar. Western Michigan has a couple kids, Levante Bellamy and Kamari Bogan, Warren Wand from Arkansas State. And obviously, we just talked about Devin Singletary with Dane there from FAU.
Keeping it moving with the watch list, how about wide receiver other than Anthony Johnson?
Yep, so there's Johnson. After that, Old Dominion wide receiver Travis Fulgham has really popped for me in the times that I've watched Old Dominion, so he's a guy I'd keep an eye on. Tyree Brady from Marshall's a big kid who can go up and get it. Ventel Bryant from Temple's looking to have a bounce back year. James Gardner has gotten a lot of buzz from Miami, Ohio, a big kid. Keyshawn Johnson from Fresno State, I would keep an eye out for him as well. And then Troy, continuing to make noise, DeAndre Douglas is a guy to watch from there. And then Toledo's got a trio of receivers as well.
How about tight ends? Notre Dame always has a tight end.
Yeah, and Alize Mack is that guy this year. You and I have been talking about this kid since his true freshman year. He was Alize Jones when he arrived on campus. Really athletic kid. Excellent after the catch. I have studied him. He's a really intriguing player. Another senior to watch, Charles Jones from Tulane. And then don't forget about an underclassman, Mitchell Wilcox from South Florida.
How about along the offensive line?
So Chandler Miller's an undersized center. I have gotten a chance to study him. I think he's got a place in the NFL level. Not sure it will be as a starter. But the rest of these guys on my watch list, Alex Barrs from Notre Dame, I've taken a peek at. He was a right guard, right tackle for the Irish. Brock Rubel from Toledo. O'Shea Douglas from Louisiana Tech, another Louisiana Tech kid. Garrick McGinn from East Carolina, another name to keep an eye on. And then underclassmen-wise, keep an eye on this duo from San Diego State, Deshaun Dixon and Tyler Romer. I've heard some good things about both of those players.
The defensive line, we talked about Ed Oliver, obviously. What else you got?
Two other big names in the senior class, David Moa from Boise State, but more so Jerry Tillery from Notre Dame. I've heard nothing but good things. I know he stood out to you when you did their spring game, his true freshman year. Tillery, is, from what I've heard, is a great athlete. I have not gotten to him yet. He flashes every time I watch Notre Dame. He flashed when I watched Tervon Coney. I'm excited to really dig deeper into his film.
How about some edge players? It seems like, you know, whether it's the FCS level or non-Power 5, for whatever reason, they always are able to produce, you know, a couple of edge guys that rack up the sacks and the hits end up being productive.
Yeah, so we talked about Jalen Ferguson a little bit earlier with Dane. Carl Granderson from Wyoming is a guy. Sutton Smith from Northern Illinois was very productive over the last couple of years. Gerard Carter I would keep an eye on. He's Ed Oliver's teammate down in Houston. The guy that really piqued my interest is Malik Reed, and I did study Reed. He's an interesting player. He's moving to inside linebacker. They play a 3-3 stack there in Nevada now. Would have been out of position as a defensive end. He was so last year, and they kind of rotated him out. He's a guy to keep an eye on. He's moving to linebacker, but I still think he's a D end at the next level. He's an interesting player.
What about the guys that are linebackers?
Yeah, so we talked about Coney with Dane. Khalil Hodge is a senior from Buffalo. I think will end up being a mid-round pick. Jelani Tavai from Hawaii I'd keep an eye on. And then Juwan Young from Marshall, another player to keep a close eye on as well.
Let's get to the secondary, and that's another position. It's weird whether it's whether it's edge players or corners, especially. It seems like the lower levels, the smaller levels, are able to produce some guys. What about a corner?
Yeah, I've watched one defensive back from outside the Power 5 so far, and it's Tyler Horton from Boise State. A little bit undersized for the corner spot, but he played all three cornerback positions. Instinctive kid, solid athletic traits. I think he'll project best as kind of a backup who can also fill in the slot as well at the next level. After that, there are some interesting names, and I've heard a lot of good things about these kids from Ball State. Mark Walton, I know, is the one kid. Old Dominion's got a kid, Brandon Addison. There are some small school players as well. Corey Ballantine from Washburn. Patrick Amara from UMass. So there are some interesting players to keep an eye on. From the underclassmen ranks, I know Notre Dame, the people there are pretty high on the kid Julian Love, who's going to be a junior. So those would be the guys to keep an eye on. And then at safety, I haven't watched a safety yet, but more small school kids. Chris Johnson from North Alabama, Nazir Adderley from Delaware, Jalen Young from FAU, and Andrew Wingard from Wyoming has gotten a lot of buzz. I haven't gotten to him yet either. I'm going to get to him very soon.
That'll do it, Fran. Wow, man, we are off and running. We got the supplemental draft tomorrow, which should be fun, and now we know exactly who to look for in the non-Power 5 conferences this year.
Yeah, we covered a lot of players today, not just the ones you need to know for this week, but then also for a lot of the conferences that you'll watch in action this fall. We're only a few weeks away. It's crazy that we're already doing these conference previews.
Yeah, man. I mean, what are we, like 6 weeks away maybe from games being played?
Yeah, I'd say 5-6 weeks away from – well, really, I think it might be five because remember we have that like that soft open where it's like two or three games. There's like one down in like Australia. I forget exactly who's playing. I think UMass might actually be playing somebody like that last week of August. And then that opening weekend is the weekend of September 1st.
Absolutely love it. Just as much as we love those of you that rate and review the show. That's big for us. So please just take the 2 seconds and rate and review the show. That helps. And if you're not already, hopefully you're subscribing to this because we got the Big 12 next week. Really, really looking forward to diving in on the Big 12 and getting the rest of the conferences in before college football starts. Hallelujah. Make sure you're checking out Fran so you can always see all of his latest stuff that he does for the Eagles. Such a valuable resource to have a guy like Fran as the co-host and superstar of the College Draft Podcast. Other than that, the keg is kicked. We're all tapped out.
Thanks for enjoying your Frosty One while listening to the College Draft. Chug. Make sure you're also subscribing to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, and Even Money Podcasts, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.